Right now, 6:17 on a Friday morning with the Musers. Time for the Observation Deck with Gordo, brought to us by Generator Supercenter and Tylock Nasser Vision.
We all love technology, makes the world better, and it can save your life, as one girl in Ohio found out. 19-year-old girl, she's driving home from work in Ohio. She crashes her truck while she's driving through the snow, crashes it into a tree, and she falls down a 15-foot ravine.
Ooh.
Right on top of the crazy prospector, who never met a ravine that he didn't pan for the good gold in. Why does ravine sound, it just sounds like such an old-timey word to me. I don't know why.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. You don't associate it with?
No, if you're trying to describe a scene of an accident or something, that makes some sense to
they
me.
They fell into the ravine.
Does it imply there is no bridge?
Yeah.
It's so old-timey, there's no bridge.
Right.
So you have to traverse a ravine.
So the truck actually goes upside down. It flips over and falls into a river. So she's upside down in a river in her truck.
Got a seatbelt on.
Uh-huh.
Got to do that first.
Uh-huh. Scary. Do you carry inside your vehicle a glass smasher and a seatbelt cutter?
Yes, it's all in one.
Yeah.
It's both, yeah.
Right.
Yep.
I have one of those, too.
I do, too.
But yet, I don't really remember where in my vehicle I put it.
I was just thinking the same thing. I think I know where it is.
Right there in your armrest console.
Right, yes. Yeah.
I think that's where we should all keep it. It should be standardized. Now, why isn't something like that standard on vehicles? Like, why do you have to purchase a separate one? Why isn't that part of the safety suite?
All right. You got another government regulation for me?
You found a way to drive it into the politics ditch already, so. But yeah, don't you think that
that's a good idea.
Yeah. It's got to be, what, a $10 item? Maybe. If they buy it at scale,
maybe.
Like Ford Motor Company, it's got to be $2.
Yeah.
So it should be up under the armrest console, you know, like tucked right there on the the top. There's a little holder for it, and that's why everybody knows that's where it is in case you go panning for the good gold in a ravine on accident. Anyway, so she ends up upside down inside her truck. She's freaking out. And she's 19, of course, so she's really panicked. You know, when you're younger, you get more panicked by situations than I think you do if you were a little bit older. She doesn't know what to do, doesn't know what she can do. Fortunately, technology steps in and saves her because her Apple Watch detected a crash and called authorities for her.
Wow, they can do that?
Yeah. Called authorities, and all of a sudden there's a voice speaking to her over the watch. It's 911, and she's talking to them, and they say, hey, we're sending help. We got your location. We're sending help out there. And so they get to her, and by the time they'd gotten to her, she was breathing from a 4 to 6 inch gap of air that was in the floorboard area. So she's, please hurry.
So, you get off on weird stuff.
Who, you're looking at Daddy right there.
No, I'm looking right at you, Gordon Keith.
So the firefighters put on their cold water suits. They entered the river. They break the driver window, open the driver door, cut the seatbelt with the non-auto manufacturer-issued seatbelt cutter. And she was found to only have minor injuries, yet she would have died if it hadn't have been for the help of those meddling firefighters.
If it hadn't been for her Apple Watch.
That's right.
Whoa. Siri, you are now
so the
my
watch
servant.
Knew it was a car crash because she knew the watch knew she was in her car.
Yeah, I can see you moving, and you can turn on that setting for crash detection, and yeah, it sees you moving in a vehicle, and you stop that suddenly, and it has an algorithm.
Very good.
I've got that on my bicycle computer, crash detection. It'll call 911. It senses an incredibly abnormal violent movement.
Right. And they had those accelerometers on inside the watch, too. So, yeah, the abnormal movement, if you're tumbling, you know, mm-hmm. it can detect that. Interesting.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Another thing dealing with technology.
And stuff.
Is college professors. They're having to go to extreme measures now to try to make sure that you are somewhat involved in your college education. Because most people sign up for college, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to get educated in some cases, and then outsource the education to their computer.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you do college for me. I just want to pay for the degree. Just let me be involved as little as possible here. So they say that that college kids have actually gotten great at doing papers.
Great.
As a matter of fact, a lot of college professors say, I can give them a writing assignment, a very difficult one, and the next day they come in with perfect papers.
Amazing.
So in some sense, we've gotten better at some things related to college, oddly enough. We can write papers really, really fast and really well.
But if you gave them a notebook and a pen and said, okay, write, they couldn't do it.
They say, what is write?
Mm-hmm.
So they are going back to old ways of testing students. And now there is a movement towards not even using pen and paper. It's having oral exams with students. The college professors say, that's the only way I can find out if this intelligence understands what we've been talking about, not the artificial intelligence inside their computer. I'm not looking to test ChatGPT.
Fascinating. I'd never even considered that option.
Yeah. So it's
like
making a comeback.
One-on-one meetings? Or?
One-on-one, Socratic method, just asking questions.
You deliver an oral essay.
Uh-huh.
Don't write it down where AI can do it for you.
Right.
That's great.
So the professor that's going to be for the story.
I would have hated that in college, though, as a student.
The professor said, you won't be able to AI your way through an oral exam. You're about to find out. You effed around. You're going to find out. I'm adding a last part there. But, yes, they say that it's not just to find out if you're doing the work. The college professors say that's part of it. But the main thing is they're really worried about the long-term impact of AI, using AI on critical thinking, because we're worried that we're going to lose the ability to even think critically, to even be able to do the work if we never have to do the work.
Right.
I mean, it's very similar to, let's say that they invent a machine that can lift a lot of weight. So I'll just send that out to my garage to do my weightlifting today, mm-hmm. and it'll do that every day. You know, I mean, it's just a tool, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I could do it. I could go out there and lift weights, but I'm not going to. Well, what do you think actually ends up happening? I lose the ability to lift that weight that robot could do because I don't exercise the muscle.
Yeah.
So it's the same as what's happening with our brain. We're not using it, and we're losing it.
It's like those studies that show, is it the hippocampus that controls your sense of direction?
I don't know which campus it is, but
I think it's the hippocampus. But since we don't use maps or our brain to figure out how to get someplace anymore, we just turn on GPS.
Right.
That part of the brain is starting to atrophy.
Right. Yes.
Dang.
That's scary.
Yet they say that the part of the brain that appreciates cat videos has grown 3 times as large. I don't know if that's related.
Man, I almost sent you one yesterday.
Uh-oh.
And it was AI. It's the first time I've really laughed at an AI video. Have you seen?
I've laughed at a lot of them. You haven't been impressed with some of the Stephen Hawking feats of strength?
No, those really don't crack me up. Like the two cats yesterday who were cooking some sort of pasta dish. And when one cat tried to flip it from the pan, it landed on its head and they both died laughing.
Okay. His brain atrophied.
I'll send it to y'all and see if you don't laugh.
Okay.
His brain now looks like a raisin.
Yeah. Yeah, there's
watching
not much.
All this video.
There's not much in
Man,
there anymore.
That's why I didn't send it to you. I thought you'd be really worried about me.
I'm always worried about you, Giorgio, because I love you so much.
Oh.
Panos Epiroritis.
There's no way.
Is a professor at NYU's Stern School of Business. And he unveiled his AI-powered oral exam last semester for the final exam in his class on AI product management. He says he's fighting fire with fire. So get this. This is a... gets more and more dystopian to me. Dystopian or dystopic? Dystopian.
Maybe dystopic.
Okay. He has students log in from home anytime that fits their schedule. And then in their oral exams, a voice cloned from a business school professor greets them. So I guess it may be his, I don't know if it's his voice or one of the professors there at the business school. So they have a voice cloned, and then AI interviews the student to give him their oral exam. So he's taking it one step further.
So he doesn't have to do it.
So he's now out of it. So that's how they take theirs. And the AI is able to respond to their questions and also analyze their facial expressions. If they look a little bit confused, it can ask, do you need more time to...
Creepy.
Yes. Yes. Wow. So then that happened. But here's the thing. Is most college kids, it would seem today, it seems like this to me, they are scared to talk to humans. Like some college kids can't order from a waiter. They if they don't want to call anyone on the phone, they'd rather spend 40 minutes trying to order from an app than make a 2-minute phone call, because humans are the scariest things of all.
Mm-hmm.
So how are they going to take this oral exam one-on-one with another human as they sit in a room and try avoid eye contact?
Not well. And I would have had a hard time with that well before AI, back when I was in school. I would have just, if you got a multiple choice test and you can think about it for a second, but just the pressure of your professor looking at you saying, "Now, what's the answer to this?" Well, it's that the thing.
You know the thing on the deal? That's what it is.
Describe
it's the thing that you talked about. I thought you were real good when you talked about it, by the way.
But give me three choices or something, and it may, register. And okay, that's what he talked about last week, and you have the answer to it.
And isn't that an unfair hardship on students to have to...
I'm sure that'll be their defense.
Not only provide the right answers, but basically manage a performance in front of another human being.
Okay, well, do something difficult, because all y'all are soft anyway, so do something that's hard.
All right, yell at clouds, man. No, I actually agree with you on this, because part of the whole learning is learning also how to interact with people, and I think that would be a good bit of resistance. I understand students having resistance to this idea of talking with a person one-on-one, your professor, where there's the power imbalance and all those things. But yet that resistance, you need to do some resistance training. Yeah. That's exactly what that is.
Yep.
And that's part of the thing you're learning in college, is how to talk with other humans, because that's the most important thing, skill, that we should be nurturing and fostering.
Mm-hmm.
Talking with other humans in person, as opposed to yelling at other humans online.
Right. Communicate.
We've replaced one with the other, and that's not such a good thing.
Right.
Yeah, and you find as you take classes that once you break down that barrier of teacher-student or professor-student, because I was always intimidated by them.
Sure.
And then you start really just thinking about what they're talking about. Oh, okay, that's what that means, or... that's the question I should ask about this. And we have a discussion about it. And all of a sudden, the light will go off.
Yeah. Love a good professor. I had some college classes I absolutely loved
too,
when they really tickle your mind and open your world view up. And it's great. Well, this professor at the end of this piece talks about how a lot of the students griped about going to this at first. And they talked to the professor and then some students who said that they ended up preferring this method.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. That they were scared to death going into the oral exam, but then when they came back out, they were like, I really like that. I felt like I got one-on-one time with my professor, which was very meaningful to them and made them feel seen and heard, and the interaction was pleasant. They may have never talked to a professor in person in their life.
Right.
And here they had this opportunity.
I think I would have preferred that as well, because I hated the monotony, the boredom of a paper being placed in front of me. Here you have an hour to write something on that. And I think if I knew that I had to give whatever this ended up being, a 20-minute oral dissertation, I think that would have motivated me, number one, to study more. You kidding me? I'm going to be sitting right in front of the professor? I can't just doodle on the side margins for 30 minutes and then fill out whatever.
You can't do the trick of they ask you the first difficult question. You say, this great question. I got the answer. I just need to go to the restroom real quick. And you go out there and you're reviewing your notes.
Right.
And you flip through the book real quick.
Well, and that one-on-one thing, too, that was the other thing that I had a hard time with in college. If you're in a big lecture hall and you're one of, 70 students or something, to me that was really disconnected and intimidating.
I know. When you look down and you see the professor, they're about 100 yards away down there.
I had a really hard time with that.
There you go. A look at our world.